I like Laurel. She seems very, very smart. All right, if my colleagues would return to the City Council chambers, we can begin with the 15 minutes presentation by the principal opponents of the appeal. It is they have one more minute. Sorry. One more minute. Your boss is on vacation, right? So you don't have to round up anybody. You are on time. I just want the record to show Commissioner Fritz is on time. It is 4:34. Carla, is this the one we only have one of you set or just a few of them?
I handed out extras. Everybody's got it.
Everyone's got it now. Okay, great. All right. We are back from recess. Quorum is present, and it is your choice to wait for Commissioner Saltzman, or we can proceed. We are ready to go.
My choice is to go. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams, members of council. My name is Michael Robinson. I'm here on behalf of Recology. To my left is Dave Dutra. Dave's the general manager for Recology, and we're going to use our 15 minutes by letting Dave start first, and then I'll finish up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. I'm happy to introduce to you today the project as well as the company or the applicant. Recology is an integrated materials management company established in the late 1920s. Specifically in Oregon, we operate a number of refuse collection companies, recycling facilities, material recovery facilities, three composting operations. We are the operator of the Metro Central Transfer Station facility. And in California, we have a large number of holdings that are similar in operations, including residual landfill operations. I'd like to start today by focusing on some of the highlights, which will help provide you with some additional information on how we plan to further ensure that we do not negatively impact on the neighbors that are so passionate about their communities, and rightly so. We have provided to you six sheets of 30 sheets that were made available to the hearings officer that shows the elevation, both the north and south side of the building. That's the entire building, which consists of 75,000 square feet, of which we lease 40,000 square feet of it. The second page, labeled C1.1, identifies what portion of the 40,000 square feet we're going to utilize as a tipping floor to receive the loads. And again, the loads coming in are primarily commercial, residential collection trucks consisting of between 8 and 10 tons per truckload. The material presently today does not include type 3 organic or food waste material, and it is received outside of the building presently, as the photos showed you earlier. The area that is designed to receive the material is an improved floor surface with perforated piping throughout the floor, so the floor is perforated. The negative air system pulls air, the ambient air within the building and outside of the building, through the material into piping, and then and then exhaust that through the four biofilters, and I'll explain a little bit more about those. So this, again, this drawing shows the location of the biofilters outside on the south side of the building as well as the tipping pad. The second page, P1.12, is a little bit closer detail of the tipping floor, giving you a sense of how many perforations are allowed for within the floor to pull moisture as well as the air through the material, keeping it aerobic and preventing it from becoming anaerobic, which may in fact generate odors. Page P402 shows details of the floor, again, as well as the push wall. I'd like to point out that the floor, the entire floor, is also curbed. So there's a slight curb that the trucks will drive over. They will tip onto the floor and then drive off the floor and out of the building. We expect that only the dualies of the truck will drive onto the floor. The tailgate is lifted, the material is extruded onto the floor, and the truck drives off. We don't anticipate mud to be tracked or suspended solids to be tracked out of the building, and we do have capabilities of washing the floor. The floor in and of itself, consisting of an area 40 by 40, will dictate much of the volume that the facility will receive. You simply can't put 400 truckloads of material onto a floor that's 1,600 square feet. The material will come in, it'll be pushed up against the retention wall, and as we generate a semi-truckload, it will be loaded and hauled off-site. Initially, we expect about 3 to 4 trucks hauled off-site with the material. The page M...
Per day, per
Yes,
month.
I'm sorry. Per day. Per operating day. Correct. So the traffic study that indicated 35 trucks, that's really a maximum designed capacity of the facility. We would be limited to that. We cannot exceed it by permit, and we would be held to standards specific to controlling that amount of material if we were, in fact, to receive that. However, if we were, that's assuming no other facilities within the city limits are operating for receiving this type of material, which is highly unlikely.
When you say by permit, which permit are you referring to?
This would be both the DEQ permit as well as the Metro permit, which has oversight and enforcement capabilities over the facility, would hold us to those standards. And so again, we have a DEQ permit, we have a Metro license, and then we have also oversight by the city health department. Page M402.02 shows the configuration of the fan system and how it ties into the biofilter. The biofilter is a sealed steel container that's roughly 22 by 4 by 4, or I think that's about, in terms of cubic footage, it's 640 cubic feet. There are four of them. It is filled with wood chips. There, those wood chips are kept moist, and as the air flows through, the volatiles are removed from within the wood chips, and then what is exhausted is about 98% free of any VOCs or volatile organisms that generate odor. I'd like to point out that in our design of the facility, this type of technology is typically used in enclosed operations for full composting operations. We are not composting here. We're receiving residential and commercial yard debris and pre- and post-consumer food waste. It's blended and immediately removed. There's no obligation or sense of us to keep it in and on the floor for any given time. As soon as we have a truckload, we want it out of the building. And the reason I point out that this technology is unique to this type of operation, again, is because it's used for composting operations. We operate right now a reload facility for the city of San Francisco. We're doing about 500 tons a day. It does not include this type of negative aeration and biofilters. We also receive and generate for composting source-separated food waste through the Metro Central Transfer Station facility. The floor there does not have a negative aeration system or leachate collection system. The material, the yard debris, and the food waste absorbs itself. It does not leachate or generate large volumes of leachate, which has been alleged. And we are currently doing about 18,000 tons a year at that facility, with homes in very close proximity. We've operated it now since April without any complaints or notices of violations, and that's receiving, again, commercial source separated food waste.
Where is that facility?
Metro Central's transfer station is northwest, city of Reno, 6160 61st Avenue.
I don't want to break your...
Portland.
Portland.
It's Portland, not Reno. Yep.
What did I say?
Reno.
I'm sorry.
It's in Reno or it's in
Portland? No, I'm sorry. It's in Portland.
Portland.
I thank you for correcting me. I don't know where that came from.
Reno.
Yeah.
Can I ask just a question, unless you're going to answer it later? So just to get a sense of how it operates. So the trucks, I'm on C1.1. And so the trucks pull in where, and?
The trucks pull in on the south side of the building, mm-hmm. through one of three doors that have that are a roll-up door that would be closed and sealed off at night. The trucks will back into the facility, back onto the floor, tip, and then leave through the same door.
So they back, okay.
Yeah.
And then how does the material get all pushed into one place?
We have loader equipment on site. There will be a loader assigned to that tipping floor, and it'll push it up against the push wall. From there, it'll be top-loaded onto a semi-truck. And we're currently doing that now. It's just we're doing it all outside with type 1 organic or yard debris material.
So it's like a little bulldozer or something?
A loader, yeah. A wheeled loader.
Okay.
So I discussed a little bit about the technology. We, as I pointed out, we have about 30 sheets of technical drawings and descriptions of the equipment. It's not typical to fully engineer and fully design it until the land use has been approved, and we know that we've got a real project that we will submit to the city for approval for construction. So they are specific to the air system and general to the site configuration and design. I think I've adequately addressed thoughts regarding the leachate. Stormwater, again, it's indoors. We're taking the existing...
Well, just so that... Sorry.
No,
so,
that's okay.
So I'm clear. The liquid leachate. So there was concerns expressed about the adequacy of the containment and processing of that and the possibility of it leaking into the river or into the... groundwater?
Yeah, okay, so we have a new concrete floor which is fully curbed, as well as the perforated pipes that will collect any liquids should it be generated. It
like goes curved, you mean like a basin?
Like a basin, correct. It'll be rolled so the trucks can roll over it and enter onto the floor. The design of the system allows for any liquids that are collected to fall into a very small sump area within the floor and within the building. There is a pump within the sump that pumps it into a small 250-gallon ag tank. When that tank is full, it's pumped into a collection vehicle and processed off-site. 250 gallons is not a lot of capacity. Our experience is that it'll range between 250, worst case 500, As I mentioned, right now, we're doing about 18,000 tons of source-separated commercial food waste at Metro Central Station without any controls at all. And we're not finding leachate on the floor to the extent that we have to manage it in any other way other than soaking it up with yard debris that comes in.
How far is it from the Metro facility to the nearest residence?
I'm going to guess their line of sight. I'm going to guess that it's about 600 feet.
And whereabouts is it located?
Eon Road, Highway 30, heading out towards Scappoose, off of...
on the way to Linton.
61st Avenue. Linton.
And Dave, you're talking about the single-family homes that would be on the south side of US 30 up the ridge.
Correct, yeah. Right. And again, that facility has been there for many, many years. We've operated it for a year and a half now with this food waste without complaint or notices of violations or concern. And Metro as well as DEQ inspect the facility monthly.
The concern is that there could be leaks in that system and not know about it. How can you assure us that there wouldn't be leaks, or if leaks occur, that they would be detected?
Well, it is a sealed tank that will be essentially in the concrete floor. It's a small collection basin or drain inlet. I think that ongoing monitoring or sealing of the tank will ensure that the tank itself will not leak. The ag tank that the material is pumped into and stored at a longer period of time is above ground. That's simply a plastic ag tank. As far as the piping, we're not anticipating leaks. Again, it's designed to flow, so its liquids won't stay there for any length of time. It'll go through the piping under air pressure and into the drain inlet tank.
And how often do you plan to wash out the concrete basin?
Best management practices will dictate that. It may be on a weekly basis. It may be on a daily basis, depending upon the seasonality, the ratio of food to yard debris, and simply, you know, how the material comes in. At this point right now at Metro Central Station, again, we're finding that the yard debris that we're mixing with the food waste is sufficient enough to keep the floor clean and manage the odors.
But you don't have a concrete floor there, though, right?
We do.
You do?
We have a solid concrete. It does not have perforated holes. You know, there's no forced air or biofilters or anything like that.
And would the ag tank hold the water that would be used to wash the floor as well?
It would, yes. Everything will go into the perforated floor system.
Is all this information that you just gave us, is that in the record?
It is.
Well, it is now.
Yeah.
Several of the sheets, Commissioner Fritz, were before the BDS staff prior to the preparation of the report, and several were before the hearings officer at the hearing.
And then there's more that you've added today?
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Yep.
I was just going to add. I was just going to add, the reason that we've added more today is exactly as Dave said. Once you have the land use approval, you begin spending the money to actually do the construction drawings, and that's what you're seeing today. But I was just going to add, if I could, very quickly, the testimony that Mr. Dutra is giving you today was before the hearings officer. So the oral testimony generally has been available since that hearing in April.
Right. My concern is the appellant talked about not having the information that their expert couldn't tell whether it's going to work or not.
That's an interesting question. I called Mr. Rask twice. I sent him an email. I got no response. We reached out to them as soon as we found the appeal was filed. And we reached out three times because we wanted to share information. We wanted to find out what his client's concerns were. And we were happy to meet with him. We got no response at all. I saw his assistant on the TV yesterday saying that the information wasn't in the file. The drawings that we're talking about may not have been in the file, but Mr. Dustra's testimony was given to the hearings officer, and none of those folks were present at that hearing. But again, the minute we found out about the appeal, we reached out because we wanted to be proactive and talk with them, and we got absolutely no response.
I might add a couple things under the best management practices that we can also do. This, it depends upon the seasonality. It depends upon the amount of food waste as a ratio to yard debris. But because we generate about 10,000 tons of biomass fuel on the site, that is, we ship urban wood waste down to a 3-inch minus biomass fuel, we can actually add that as a top or biofilter cover right over the material at the end of the night, essentially burying any food waste or yard debris that comes in, which would be a deterrent to vectors. We can hire and have hired rodent control. As you know, the facility right now operates as a solid dry waste material recovery facility, so we have an ongoing program there for vector control. They can indicate to us whether or not an additional measure like that is necessary, whether or not we're generating vectors. As far as noise impact, the operation, we're not adding any additional equipment. In fact, we're taking the existing operation and moving it inside the building, so we do not anticipate any additional noise. In fact, we anticipate reducing some of our noise. I think that I've covered all of the points that that I have. Mike?
Thank you, Dave. Mr. Mayor, unless you have other questions, I'll proceed.
Can I just ask a few follow-up questions?
Certainly.
So you're subject to regular health inspections by the county, which is also if... is that done on a – what's the regime or protocol that they use for that? Is it surprise visits like restaurants? Is it regular surprise visits? How is that done?
My understanding is from specifically the county, it would be on a complaint basis. However, DEQ and Metro do both surprised and scheduled inspections on a monthly basis. We have indicated to all parties that we're willing to enter into a good neighbor agreement. That agreement will include how we not only report having received a complaint, but what actions we'll take immediately following the complaint. In this particular case, if there's a complaint of odors, the simplest thing we can do is simply ensure that the material is removed immediately, and we will do that. But again, in our experience operating facilities like this, because of the throughput capacity and the time that the material stays on the floor, odors are not an issue. They're not an issue at Metro Central, where the ratio food to yard is much higher, up to 50% food waste to yard debris. They're not an issue in San Francisco, where we operate a similar operation, which was much higher ratios and significantly more volumes.
So, have any of your operations ever, there was testimony expressing concern about dust and bugs or rodents that carry diseases? Has anyone at your, anyone working for you, anyone, any neighbor living nearby ever contracted a disease?
No. And we have not only transfer reload facilities, but also composting operations, which are currently receiving food waste and composting. And again, the trick is all in how you manage the product or the feedstock and making sure that you've got proper practices in place to control those vectors.
And then questions were raised about the integrity of the company, bribery, and those kinds of things. I want to hear your side of the story.
Recology is a company that ranks, I believe, seventh largest in the nation, but we are 100% employee-owned. We have 2,700 employees, and I couldn't tell you how many operating sites. It's very difficult in the industry to operate from the 1920s to present day without incurring some problems. I think what's important is to look at our track record here in Oregon with the facilities that we have and that are operating in Oregon. We, to my knowledge, have no notices of violations in the years that we've been here and operating. We respond very quickly to any complaints. And I think overall, the municipalities would indicate that we are a good, responsive, and responsible operator.
Mayor, if I may, just very quickly, you know, I heard those comments, and I'm going to ask the council to leave the written record open. We have a big package of material we haven't had a chance to review, and we want to answer your questions as well as the things we heard our neighbors say. But I will say, I stand by this company. I do not represent criminals. And I want to look very carefully at what they put in their written materials, and we will give you a response to each and every item. But this company would not have the contracts it has in this state, as clean as the state is, if there were a problem with this company. And I stand by this company.
Thank you.
One last question.
Yes.
Flooding. So Commissioner Saltzman and I have traded off over the years, reducing flooding by the... restoring the Johnson Creek floodplain, but it still floods. Hopefully it will reduce flooding, but we're not guaranteeing it will eliminate all flooding. The concerns raised about, let's say, potential flooding, it's out of the flood zone from what I can tell by the maps, but let's say it goes above that, what happens? What do you do?
Well, we've got a facility that's located above a 100-year floodplain. I think as a business owner, we're willing to take the risk that in the event it were to exceed that, we would certainly respond immediately, taking controls to ensure that the material is cleaned. We don't anticipate garbage. It is a mixed dry waste facility presently. We don't experience or have any complaints of migrating garbage from the site presently. The yard debris, organics, and food waste does not contain garbage that we would anticipate floating down the rivers or migrating from the site. And I think the property owner will testify that we are part of a program. We regularly police the roads going in and out of the facility collecting trash.
Thank you, sir.
Please go ahead.
Well, first of all, Mr. Robinson, I really appreciate your offer to keep the record open, because I think it is – sometimes it takes coming to council before all sides can know what's on the table and then start talking with each other. So I greatly appreciate that. And then I also heard and saw the letter about the good neighbor agreement. So I'm taking that you would be amenable to a condition of approval requiring a good neighbor agreement.
Yes, ma'am. We entered into a good neighbor agreement with the St. John's Neighborhood Association for the Suttle Road facility. And we're happy to do it with the Linz Group as well.
Thank you. I think a little extra time for the neighbors to talk to folks in Linton and in St. John's to find out what the experience has been might. I'd like to have that information.
And thank you. We'd be happy to have that in the record.
Thank you. And then my final question is about the reversing of the trucks to do the tipping. Is that different from the way the trucks provide their deliveries right now?
No. The trucks containing dry solid waste for sorting currently back into the facility and drive out the same door.
Okay. And then so that's – it'll just be more of them is one of the concerns. So from the neighbors, I'd like to hear from you as to whether you can currently hear the beep, beep, beeping. And I also – I know that some folks are going to have to leave. I really appreciate everybody coming during the day to the hearing. We sometimes try to schedule land use hearings in the evening so that more neighbors can participate. But if you can let your neighbors know that the record will be held open so that there will be comments, I really appreciate that.
I might bring to your attention that we do have a traffic study, and there might be some concern differentiating between the other heavy uses on the property now. There's a cement facility plant on site as well as an asphalt plant on site. And a number of other heavy industrial uses that all rely on backup alarms and things like that. So
is your proposal to add this facility, or are you going to be taking away any of your other recycling products?
What we're adding is only the component of the Type 3 organic material. Everything else stays.
Styrofoam and all the other things that you already do.
Correct.
Thank you.
So I do note you have 3 minutes and 20 seconds. I have been waiting. I have a series of questions to ask, so I'm hoping that you can finish your thought. I don't want to jump on board with the questions currently being asked. So.
Mr. Mayor, may I answer very quickly your flood question without causing Commissioner Leonard any more consternation? I promise I'll be fast. And then I had just a little bit of testimony about actual approval criteria, and I'm wondering if I might have just two extra minutes.
We've asked you questions, so you...
Let me just answer very quickly, add to Dave's facts on flooding. The hearings officer noted that we are 800 feet away, and you can see from the map, from the E-zones around Johnson Creek. We don't believe the site is susceptible to flooding, but we all know things happen. We would certainly accept a reasonable condition of approval that requires us to have a flood mitigation plan in effect. We have a nuisance mitigation plan. That was something BDS looked at and the hearings officer looked at, so we'll add that. Maybe I can just go through my testimony very quickly. I'll try and give us a couple extra minutes. I'll try and do it in 5 minutes. So three things.
To be clear, yes, your 320 was frozen for some time, so I don't. That's up to the hearing officer to give you more.
I'll go very quick.
I'm giving you more time because I asked a bunch of questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Okay. I'll get to those in a minute. First, three real quick things. I did want the written record to remain open if the council would grant that. I was suggesting 1 week for all parties to submit argument and evidence, 1 week for parties to rebut, and we have waived the 120-day clock, so you don't have a clock problem. Secondly, I want to be very clear. Mr. Saluga testified that we're proposing, it sounded like, to inject leachate into the ground. That is not the case. It's not what our application said. BES looked at our plan and agreed with how we proposed to collect the leachate and treat stormwater. Thirdly, before I go to my testimony, I want to respond to the exhibit that the opponents referenced, Exhibit 1, page 6. This is the graph that they're talking about. But here's what they didn't say. This is text at the bottom of the graph. Quote, the trips generated in the pilot areas would not be representative of the trips generated citywide because the pilot routes are much smaller than a typical yard debris route. Thus, an extrapolation of trips anticipated citywide based on the pilot trips would be a gross misrepresentation, end quote. So we stand by our argument, and the hearings officer agreed with us, that generally we have about 5% compostable food waste. It's a small percentage. It's going to be mixed with yard debris, as Dave said. It's not going to be much larger than that. So let me turn to the approval criteria, which you did not hear mentioned in the opponent's testimony. First of all, with respect to odor, I think the reason Dave explained to the extent he did is we're not going to have a wind tunnel effect, and the negative aeration floor is not going to be affected by strong winds. Plus, the hearings officer conditioned us to move that waste out within 48 hours, and as Dave said, there's no reason to leave it in there. Leaving it in there costs money. We want to get it out, and that's what we'll do. The leachate is controlled. We think the system works. BES looked at it and agreed with it. Stormwater is taken care of. BES looked at that as well. We don't believe the site would flood, but I'll tell you, we'll accept a reasonable condition of approval that deals with that eventuality. We believe nuisance control and vector control will be taken care of. You only have problems if you have nesting, water source, and food source. You're not going to have that here. The material is going to be moved out, and we've committed to having a clean site. And one of the conditions that allows BDS to come on site without notice anytime they want, we are fine with that. We invite those kind of inspections. We have not one, we have three traffic reports. We have two that were done before the hearings officer. We have one that looked at the appeal, and that's in the record as well, and you'll hear from Ms. Kuhn a little later. There is no traffic impact. The Parks Department had no comment. PBOT had a favorable comment. If there were going to be an impact on Springwater Trail Corridor, we would have heard from it from those two agencies. Plus, that trail is already crossed by far busier streets like Foster and Southeast 82nd. It's a good trail. I've ridden on it. Our additional 110 trips are not going to make it unusable. We met the approval criteria. Staff looked at it. The hearings officer looked at it. We received no negative bureau comments. This is something that we took great pains to make sure we addressed the approval criteria. Let me end with one last approval criteria, if I could, Mayor. This is 815-220-I. It's the conditional use permit. It requires us to demonstrate that public benefits outweigh impacts that can't be mitigated. We don't believe there are any impacts that haven't been or can't be mitigated either by the way we operate or with appropriate conditions of approval. But the public benefit is very clear. If you're going to have this program, you have to have regional facilities that take this waste. It's not possible to ship individual garbage truckloads to compost facilities outside of the city. That would not be sustainable. It wouldn't make sense. Let me turn very quickly to the exhibits, and then I'll finish up, Mr. Mayor. The two photos on the first exhibit, the large one to the left shows the aerial. You saw this from staff. The important point to note is the forested slope on the south. That's Southeast Knapp Road running along that. We have no access to it. The condition prohibits us. We'd accept a condition saying we don't want access. We're not going to go that way. We're going to go up to Foster. The zoning map to the right shows that we're in the center of an industrially zoned area. That's where we should be. And Seth, if you could go to the next map real quickly. That's a blow up. Again, that's the IH area. It shows we're in the middle of it. We're not near Johnson Creek on the north, and we're away from the forested slope to the south. And the last exhibit, Mr. Mayor, simply is a blow up of information that's already in the record. It shows the facility, and the arrows show how the trucks operate to and from the building and into the building. We think BDS and the hearings officer got it right. We'd ask you to reject the appeal and approve the application. We're comfortable with the conditions that the hearings officer imposed, but we'll also accept additional conditions. And as I said, we'd like you to keep the written record open, please. Thank you for your time today.
Commissioner Leonard?
Where does the food waste come from?
In this particular case, we anticipate food waste coming from residences within the area, including the Lentz area, as well as small businesses that generate restaurant food waste.
And so how does it get from where the food waste is generated to your facility?
You as a resident in the area would be asked to deposit it into a container that would be placed on the curb, collected weekly into a compacted truck, again, between 8 to 10 tons. When the truck's full, it comes to the facility and tips it onto the floor where it's consolidated and then shipped off-site. That's currently what's happening now, with the exception of the added component of food waste.
At the facility?
At the
with
facility.
With respect to the woody materials that you take in?
Correct. In addition to the woody.
And so what is the geographic area in your proposal that that food waste will come from?
We're anticipating a service area of which would include southeast Portland and surrounding communities. It may be market-driven. There may be other facilities such as Metro South that it will compete with, but we believe that there's going to be sufficient volumes to support the business and the investment that we're moving forward with or would like to.
So the nearest facilities beyond the one you're proposing would be the Settle Road and Yon Road facility that you currently operate?
And there has been discussions from Metro that they plan to accept it at Metro South, although I don't know that that's been confirmed.
Oregon City?
Yes, Oregon City.
So I'm just curious, though, if you don't have any particular geographic limitation, how you can estimate there will only be 110 extra trips a day?
I'm not sure where the 110 trips a day come from.
Comes from your data.
Comes from your data from your traffic engineer. Okay, I'm considering both inbound. You're considering both inbound and outbound trips.
I'm just reading from the
35 garbage trucks in, 35 out, and then 10 semis in and out each.
Right. Right.
Well, but you're anticipating a question I'm going to ask, so I want you to finish.
Right. Right now, the only city that's moving forward with plans to allow for the collection of food waste is the city of Portland. The city has shared with us figures that range between 60,000 and 80,000 tons per year generated citywide. We're anticipating receiving a percentage of that we then extrapolate down to the number of loads that we're receiving, as well as the design capacity.
And so then how would it be determined whether or not you actually would be the receiver of the food waste ultimately if we had a full-scale program?
It would be entirely up to the haulers.
And so
there's no flow control.
I'm wondering about the assumptions that were made for the 110 trips. What were the underlying assumptions made?
The size of the floor. It's the design capacity of the facility. And that is the maximum amount that we feel the facility under that design can manage.
And so you're comfortable saying you would agree to no more than a limit?
Correct.
Analysis from the hearings officer also finds, according to your data, that retail sales will occur at the property for soil amendment sales.
Mm-hmm.
And so explain that to me. What's
go ahead.
Commissioner Leonard, your code allows in this zone retail sales no larger than 3,000 square feet. So if you visited the site or if you look at the photos, what we have are open bins on north of the building. It's bark dust, the kind of things that a gardener would...
Post.
Yeah, the kind of things that a gardener would back up his truck to or her truck, put it into the truck and take it away.
The hope is that as you bring yard debris to us as a self-hauler or a homeowner, that you're going to then say, hey, throw a couple yards of compost in for me.
It's what you would find at a garden supply area. And we don't, Julia Kuhn from Kittleson can probably answer your questions better than I, but I can tell you in the discussions we have with Mr. Haley, we erred on the side of guessing more traffic than we believe that area will actually attract. But it's that small retail area, Commissioner.
But you're arguing on one hand that you're not going to be composting on the site, but you are saying you will sell compost at the retail level on the site.
We do currently.
Compost.
It's a finished compost. It's no longer active or gassing or generating odor. It's a finished compost material that you would apply to your garden.
But why does the hearings officer say on page 9 of his decision, the expanded use, including the soil amendment sales?
Because,
what does he mean by the expanded use?
Because in that...
Including increased retail sales.
Because in that zoning district, Commissioner, if you can have up to 3,000 square feet of a retail use, you just have to call it out in your application. It's not part of the CUP. We discussed it with BDS staff. We showed it on the site. That's what the hearings officer was referring to, are those open bunkers where the bark dust and the final, the same thing that one would find in any garden shop. That's what he's referring to.
But are you taking any of the items that are coming in this new application and turning around and selling them directly at a retail level?
Not at this time, no.
No.
Can I just clarify, Commissioner, if I could? Mm-hmm. So are you curing or cooking or whatever that word is, compost on site?
No. We have not applied for any permit from any local or state agency to compost. The materials are trucked off-site to compost facilities outside of the city of Portland.
So where does the compost come from that you currently sell?
Largely the Suttle Road facility and the Foster Road facility and one additional one in West Lynn that we operate.
We're not making compost at either Suttle or Foster.
Right. These are reload facilities only. Material is largely generated out of North Plains, the Nature's Needs facility there.
That's where the composting occurs, Commissioner.
in the hearings officer report, so on page 13, he mentions that inside the building, trash will be separated from the other material. Is that trash that would be thrown improperly into food waste? Or what is that he is describing?
Well, we currently do that now as a dry waste facility. On occasion, putrescible waste can find its way into debris boxes that contain C&D material. We separate that at the facility. If a load was to come in and there was large percentages of contamination, that would warrant a laborer there to pull out perhaps trash bags or something that was inappropriately placed into a residential container, then we might, if we have an opportunity to pull it out there. Otherwise, it's pulled out at the compost facility.
So currently, there isn't any limitation on the amount of food waste you could process at the site, other than your stated intention of not processing more than a given amount.
There are no stated limitations. There are physical limitations in the design of the operation, and there are stated limitations within the permit capacity of the facility.
Stated limitations in terms of the square feet.
That as well as the number of trucks.
But could you expand the hours of operation to accommodate more?
Not without the approval of Metro or DEQ. We'd have to go back through an approval process for the operating plan.
What are the hours of operation of the Suttle Road and the Eon Road facilities?
It ranges through the seasons, but at this point it's 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. At times during the summer seasons, it's 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. of 6 days a week.
And what are the hours of operation on the Lent site?
They would be the same.
Thank you.
And we,
Commissioner Saltzman.
So the 35 trips or trips by hauling trucks per day, I'm kind of curious if it's totally the decision to go to your location is totally driven by or a hauler. Are you going to stop a hauler at the gate and say you have to go to Metro Central or Metro South? sorry, we've had our 35 trips.
Well, I believe that if we were to receive all 35 trips, it would total an amount that exceeds what the city has, what the city currently generates in yard debris. Again, 35 trips in, roughly 10 tons a load, 350 tons a day. That's far and above what we think the city is generating. So, because we,
at some point, as Commissioner Leonard's questions, I think, were directed, at some point you can expand your market to other jurisdictions.
We could, and at, and would that, and at require, that point, we would have to come back and amend the operating plan, which would require DEQ and Metro approval. It's our understanding that that is a fixed facility capacity. We'd have to probably expand the floor as well, which would require a permit from the city. There's an approval process that we would have to go through in order to expand that. You just simply can't open it up to 400 truckloads a day and operate.
So according to your analysis, then 35 trips by yard debris trucks, I guess, to be correct.
Garbage trucks.
Garbage trucks, yeah.
They're dedicated
or yard
to,
debris trucks.
They're dedicated to picking up the yard debris. I mean, like when I think of my hauler, there's a garbage truck and then there's a yard debris truck.
Yeah, which okay, are.
So that's what we're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah, correct.
So 35 trips constitutes the most that Portland.
That is the maximum designed capacity of the facility. We get to that point, it's shut off.
Okay. And then. I haven't read your application, but the expert from the appellant mentioned there's a phrase in there that sanitary conditions will be maintained, but that's not defined. What is, could you define that for us? Or
Commissioner,
is that in your application?
I guess Commissioner Saltzman, our application was at least 20, 25 pages long. We went through each approval criteria, and there are several that require us to address the conditions of the application and the nuisance and provide a nuisance mitigation plan. I believe the phrase he's referring to was in the nuisance mitigation plan, and we set a baseline saying we'd maintain a sanitary facility so we wouldn't create nuisances. And then when we went beyond that, Commissioner, to explain how we would do that.
And typically, those operating plans are approved by DEQ and Metro, and they include odor monitoring plans, they include best management practices, and certain daily and weekly activities. So because, again, the facility hasn't gone through the step of being permitted through those entities, these plans have not yet been drafted and developed, but they will be.
So you don't have, at this point, a DEQ permit or a franchise from Metro? Is that my
Well, it's a license from Metro and a license. Permit from DEQ, and that is correct. We do not have those as of yet.
But we do have permits we are operating under now.
Yes, we do for the solid waste and yard debris aspect of the operation, but not the Type 3 organics.
But when you do get your DEQ and Metro permits, you intend to stipulate no more than 35?
Quite clearly.
Trucks. Okay. And then just on the 48 hours for the waste being present, I mean,
Could I just, you made a really good point. Not knowing exactly what approval, but if council does consider a vote to move this forward, a requirement that you notify us of change of DEQ or Metro so that we're not sort of on the sideline?
Absolutely, we would accept that condition. Mm-hmm.
So I share the notion when I think of no more than 48 hours, but I also think of a waste transfer station. I mean, stuff moves from one end to the other, more or less, in a big transfer station. So are you saying that in 48 hours, something that comes in at hour one will not be there 48 hours later?
And typically,
at some points, the floor will actually be
clean,
totally clean.
Correct. In fact, if required, for example, should vectors become a matter of concern, we could operate the facility in such a way as to make ensure that all of the waste is off the floor by the end of the day and containerized, either in an on-site container or an awaiting truck that would continue to receive material for the next day. But typically, these loads will come in two surges, one about 10 a.m. in the morning, the other about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, as those residential trucks come off the routes. It's very easy to consolidate the material and get it off and out of the building.
Okay. And then there was a, again, some testimony, and we were referred to the graft about the organics percentage, again, by the appellant saying that it could be as high as 20% organic. And you're saying you're handling more than that right now?
At the Metro Central Transfer Station, it's a one-to-one ratio. It's roughly 50% of what's leaving there, and that's about 75 tons a day, which is about three times what we expect out of this facility.
And my final question, the bioreactors to control the odors and the negative pressure, has this been used? Are you using this at other locations?
Not in transfer or reload facilities. It's used within facilities that actually conduct composting, that actually take the material, leave it on site, and compost. It's very effective.
We're applying a technology that's used in a place with more intense use to this one to make sure that we don't have an odor problem.
So it's considered a proven, reliable
very
practice.
Very reliable, very proven, and very necessary in the Pacific Northwest. We do not own the building. It is a wood-constructed building, and we want to maintain the integrity of the building, and we feel that it'll serve as not only a way in which to manage the odors, but also remove ambient moisture from the air and better preserve the building.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. Commissioner Salzman asked many of the questions. Just as a follow-up to the DEQ discussion, are you anticipating needing any changes in the Bureau of Environmental Services stormwater runoff permits?
No.
Because that was one of the allegations in the appeal. But your information from BES is that, no, they won't be modifying that.
That's correct.
Okay. And then, Mr. Robinson, you mentioned that you'd be okay with the Bureau of Development Services being allowed on site without notice. That's not the condition of approval that's currently there. It says 24 hours.
That's correct.
You'd be okay with allowing them
absolutely
to inspect any time?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other discussion from council? All right, we will now hear from
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your
thank
testimony.
You,
appreciate it. We will now hear from individuals who oppose the appeal.
We have six people who signed up. Okay. The first three, please come on up, are David Putra, Kevin Loftus, and Matt Hughart.
Thank you for waiting. We appreciate your patience. Welcome to City Council. We need a third person.
Actually, she had listed my name.
Oh, okay.
Alex Shea.
Mr. Shea, please come forward and have a seat.
And the last two are Kerry Stanley and Roy Hatcher.
Would you like to begin, sir?
Yes, thank you. Mayor Adams, Council, I'm Kevin Loftus, and I am the representative of the owners of the Freeway Land 2 property at Southeast 101st, where Recology is a tenant. The freeway land site has had a long and controversial history as an industrial site. Our group has owned the property for a little over 5 years. In that time, considerable time, effort, and cash resources have been expended to eliminate past environmental concerns and make this a well-run operating location for a variety of good, mostly industrial tenants that employ about 200 people. 2 years ago, Recology purchased the assets of a failing company, which was then a tenant at Freeway. Recology worked closely with DEQ and us to fully remediate a yard area site that had previously been used by the former company. In this process, I came to know and respect Recology and their management and concluded that this was a most responsible firm who would be a valued tenant at Freeway Land. It is important to note that we are not passive landlords. We do not want any tenant to create environmental hazards, nuisances, or stormwater concerns on our property. While Johnson Creek goes through Freeway Land, I'd like to note that the developed parts of the property are not prone to flooding, and this has been confirmed by actual results during the 1996 and 2009 flood events. We did not own it in 96, but we did it in 2009. While developing the application for this conditional use permit, we had several meetings with Recology to fully understand their plans. We involved our own consultants. This was our own environmental consultant, our own wetlands consultants, and some other people. In these meetings, and in the end, we're satisfied that Recology's plans and their conditional use application were sound. We then and now continue to support their application. I'd be happy to answer any specific questions that the council has on the freeway property, because I've heard some things that may not be accurate from my perspective, and so I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
I do have some questions. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
So I'm familiar with the site, and as I recall, it's approximately 110 acres in total and about 50-some acres that is not in wet in the flood zone.
We're the site that we're talking about now, excluding the Knapp parcel.
That's not my question. Okay. My question is freeway lands itself, the entire amount of property owned is about 110 acres. Is that right? Or
it's actually 106 acres. We recently sold 2.9 acres to the city.
Okay, so 106. And then the area that is in not in the flood zone is about 50 acres in total?
It's approximately about 70 acres.
About 70 acres. It's not in the flood zone. So of the 70
In the flood zone?
That's not in the flood zone.
I would say that it's much higher than that, because the flood zone, what is considered by the FEMA maps to be the flood zone, would be Johnson Creek and then what had been part of the northeast corner of the property, and that was actually the parcel that was just recently sold within the last month and a half.
So at least 70 acres is not in the flood zone?
Correct. Probably more.
Okay, and probably more. How many of the 70 acres that let's just say is not in the flood zone is currently used?
We use 70 acres on the property.
And it's all occupied?
Yes.
And the particular parcel that is the subject of this hearing is how many acres?
A little over 6 acres, I believe.
A little over 6 acres.
Yes.
And so there's occupancy on both sides?
There is occupancy on three sides, not on the southern side. That comes right up to a mitigation area, which is probably 100, 150 feet from Knapp Road.
And the leases that are on the property surrounding the subject property are long-term leases?
Yes. We have a variety of leases month to month to up to 10 years.
Month to month up to 10 years. But it's, the point I'm trying to get at is that as you could tell from the questions I was asking earlier, is I don't have a concern about whether or not this is in the flood zone. As I've said, I've spent some time dealing with this property, so I understand that we're not talking about property in the flood zone, but rather it's about the amount of traffic that will be generated by the potential expansion of the recycling of food, and particularly given that it sounds like the geographic area could be unlimited as to where that product would come from in the city. Why wouldn't I think this might be a toehold that would allow them to further expand the site at some future point, given the proclivity of Portlanders to recycle and the desire to want to particularly recycle food?
I would have to go back to the physical limitations of the building.
Right, but that's not my question. My question is, why wouldn't, if this were successful at some point, they seek to expand on the site to maybe offer you better terms than an existing lease is providing to expand the operation?
They can't, because we're not going to build any more buildings on the site. And this would this is an indoor operation. They're limited by their footprint.
Right, but if you were to renegotiate a lease on an adjoining piece of property that you control that isn't the current site, so they could expand their operation, what would stop that from happening?
I'm not sure how to answer that, sir, because they would have to come back to you, the city, and Metro to expand their operation.
And I understand that, but they would already have an operation on the site, so
yes.
It would be a matter of expanding an existing operation, not, as we're doing here today, creating a brand new one. It just seems to me that this is the ironic argument, I guess, the irony of my argument is I expect this to be a hugely successful operation, and therein lies the concern because of the traffic impact and because of the potential associated nuisances with this particular kind of business. And it would seem to me there would be a huge incentive to expand it at some point.